Welcome to Radioactive's Youth Media Podcast. I'm Aisha Burka.
And I'm Paul Kiefer.
Radioactive is a program through KUOW NPR's Seattle affiliate, which trains teens in radio journalism and production.
And today, we bring you a podcast on food.
Not a podcast about how to cook food, not a podcast about where to get food, but a podcast about food as culture.
How does food play a role in your life? What does food mean to you? What rituals do you have around food? Food culture is the part of food that isn't edible or profitable.
But before we start, we have our new recurring segment,
Throwback Thursday. So, if you didn't know, in the 19th century, ketchup was used to treat diarrhea. Hey!
Moving on. When we were trying to come up with a theme for this week's podcast, Paul and I turned to each other and both said food almost at the same time.
Yeah, because Ramadan.
Exactly, because Ramadan. Both Paul and I had been fasting for the past month, and we had food on our minds.
Yeah, I mean, food is an essential part of my day. And part of the challenge of Ramadan is learning to fill my day with something other than food, or else I just sit at home and stare at food. And I'm not hungry, but it's not really that entertaining to just stare at a banana, so, you know.
Don't get me wrong, Ramadan is a wonderful time of year, but I'm glad that I'm eating again.
Yeah, I'm, like, super excited to be able to eat food all the time, and I am eating food all the time, because food has always been pretty essential in my life. I've been cooking since I was in elementary school. I wasn't a good cook in elementary school, but I tried anyway.
What kind of food does an elementary schooler try to cook?
Well, my most memorable recipe was an attempt to make bread. The end result had a consistency and flavor kind of like really cheap, bland cheese, and I've never been able to recreate that, which I kind of regret because it'd be a lot cheaper than cheese.
Yeah, that was probably for the better. Okay, let's refocus.
We sent our intrepid reporter, Julia Furukawa, into the depths of the U District to ask people about the role food plays in their lives.
First of all, I want to live. Food is good for living.
Just keep me alive.
Probably because it brings people together. Like, that's like the dinner table is where everyone comes together to eat, and like everyone has to eat.
The opportunity for family members and I to just catch up and, like, you know, talk to each other.
Just family dinners creates a emotional bond, connections between whoever you're eating it with, whether it's friends or family. And it's, like, the easiest way to create a welcoming environment with others, like, whether it's on a date or just with family.
Food's probably the one thing we get the most enjoyment out of cross-culturally, so if you want two people from across the world to bond really quickly, it's probably going to be over food and a drink. So I feel like it's essential and cultural.
I know I've used food to bond with people in all sorts of situations because it shows love. It's kind of like sharing a bit of where you come from. But then again, my family is super food centric, but we don't have that many recipes that reflect where we come from. Just, you know, kind of disappointing.
What do you mean?
My family eats beans and rice and experiments with pickles and makes chicken and waffles and that kind of stuff. None of those recipes were really passed down to us, and we don't really have what most people would consider home cooking around my house.
Is that a bad thing?
Well, sometimes I wish that we ate the stuff that my parents grew up eating, but when I ask my dad about what he ate when he was a kid, he doesn't have many fond memories because it was like all cream of mushroom soup and like potato chips and stuff. So at this point, the closest things I have to home cooking are things that my parents learned to cook after college.
Well, my parents grew up in Oromia as well as Addis Ababa. Culture played a huge role in their lives, and that included food. In my house, my mom makes food with many different spices. One type of food that is well known in my culture is wati, which is eaten with bedena. It is a cuisine that takes you on a wild ride. The spicy barbare taste will have you questioning why you decided to even eat it in the first place. The sweet taste of tomatoes accompanied by the sour taste of bedena mixes perfectly together.
It's the Subway thing, like, or like Kool-Aid, you know, like, oh yeah, like when you burst through the wall. Is that food as valuable when you eat it alone?
Of course not, because normally in my culture, food is something that brings people together. With food, we can express our creativity.
Totally. My aunt used to work as a cook, and she told me that cooking for people is a super vulnerable experience, because you're expressing your creativity, as you said, and you're playing with ingredients and you're playing with dishes that people know, and then you're serving them to people and hoping that they enjoy them. So you're taking a huge risk because you're serving people, literally, your creativity on a plate and allowing them to criticize it or hoping that they enjoy it, and that's really impressive.
Yeah, that must be scary. I'd probably never do that. Well, speaking of incredibly special, we had the chance to talk to John Rubin, who is a co-founder of the Conflict Kitchen in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
The Conflict Kitchen is one of the most interesting intersections of food, culture, and identity in the United States. We'll let John explain the project.
Conflict Kitchen started about 5 years ago, and it's essentially a public art project in the form of a restaurant that serves food from countries the United States is in conflict with on a rotating basis.
In the past, the restaurant has focused on Afghanistan, North Korea, Palestine, Iran, and Venezuela, and the restaurant is currently presenting Cuban food and culture.
And the main goal or aim of the project is to engage people specifically in our city of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, on the street using food as a way to get them to think about places and people that are usually vilified in either the media or through governmental policy. We are interesting to many different types of people because we're a takeout food joint that serves really great food in a highly trafficked public plaza. So essentially, we're using a very popular vernacular structure to hopefully bring in a wider set of people who might or might not be thinking along the same political or cultural lines that we are.
I asked John whether he would consider opening an American restaurant in any of the focus countries.
And so the need for, say, an Americanized restaurant in any of these countries is not so significant. You know, we've got a vast cultural reach. I think the inverse is needed. The project for us is fundamentally, in the end, self-reflexive. It's a bit of a criticism about American culture and the distance we have with the places that we're deeply involved with.
John told me about a meal and a conversation created by the Conflict Kitchen that really stood out.
We've done these live Skype meals between Pittsburgh and Tehran, where we'll have a dinner table in Pittsburgh, and we put it up against a large projection screen that is live broadcasting a dinner table in Tehran, and they're doing the same. And so, you know, we're all cooking the same Persian recipes, but we're in two different countries, and we're attempting to kind of bridge this, large geographical space. And the fact that we're all sort of trying to create the same recipes, but starting from fundamentally different cultural situations, different ingredients, the food and its preparation itself became, you know, a great sort of starting point for a conversation that led in. You know, one of the interesting things that came out of that second time we did that project was after the kind of new round of sanctions. The folks in Iran were making these recipes primarily by buying them cheaply at almost like fast food stores. And we were able to do everything from scratch, getting all of like the best ingredients, you know, and it was just basically the sort of privilege that we had economically to ironically make Persian food more authentically than people, you know, in Iran were doing for this one event at least. So, and that kind of brought up a whole conversation about not only food, but the sanctions and sort of the different dynamics that each set of people were living in.
The Conflict Kitchen project is based on the understanding food can create honest and otherwise inaccessible conversations.
Cuisine is oftentimes this mechanism that we use, to bring people into a conversation that might sometimes be uncomfortable for them to have. A lot of immigrant communities will introduce themselves into a city by opening up a restaurant. I mean, the best way sort of to find about someone's life is to sit in their kitchen with them, and stories sort of organically occur, and politics is naturally interwoven with eating.
What Mr. Rubin is essentially doing is creating meals that connect communities that otherwise would never connect. And to connect our community, we hosted a potluck that gave us a chance to share a bit of our culture through our food.
We asked fellow Radioactivians to share their thoughts on the significance of food during the potluck.
even if they're not Indian, I mean, if they're, like, you know, white or Ethiopian or, like, you know, African-American or Icelandian, I mean, it is kind of nice to know that everybody loves samosas.
Some people had stories behind the food that they brought.
When we have parties, like, me, I help my dad make it, and we make it together, and then we just share with people and stuff.
And Gerardo summed it up nicely.
Food just brings people together, so, like, my family, when like, we get home, we all gather up and eat and stuff.
Why do you think it does that? Why do you think it brings people together?
Because I feel like everybody eats.
It's true. Food is a mutual experience. Food can be a risk you take for other people. People show their love through food, they introduce themselves through food, and that's what makes it special.
Thanks to our whole team, Rogelia Sanchez, Jack Paradise, Lola Garcia, Mamanza Dogra, Gerardo Ramos, and Julia Furukawa.
You can like our page on Facebook, Radioactive Youth Media, and follow us on Twitter at KUOW Radioactive. Be sure to subscribe to the Radioactive podcast on iTunes or wherever you download your podcasts.
Special thanks to Julia Furukawa for collecting answers, the entire Radioactive team for the potluck, and our guest, John Rubin, for his insight.
And extra thanks to our editors, Sophie Ding and Lila Katayev.
Thanks for tuning in.
It's your girl Aisha.
It's your boy Paul. And we're out.